supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, soil solarization is a popular topic among our listeners, but many can't wrap their heads around exactly what it takes to use the power of the sun to clear a bed of dread disease and wascally weeds. We'll tell you exactly what that sunshine can and can't do for your problem areas after a lot of your problematic phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Peter, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. Peter, where are you?
Well, actually, I'm calling from Philly. I'm calling from my job, which is across the street from Franklin Square. But I live in the Fishtown neighborhood of Philadelphia.
Okay. And Peter, would you be a reporter for WHYY?
Indeed. Indeed, I am, yes.
Are you on the clock now, man? This isn't like your lunch hour. Are you?
No, I'm actually on the clock, yeah.
Okay.
I'm calling you.
Good,
so
good.
And
I thought I had a sweet job. All right, what can we do for you, Peter?
Well, it's my house in Fishtown. I just bought this place. It's a row home. And a previous owner had the entire backyard paved. It was concreted over. And the yard was one of the reasons I bought the place, because it has a pretty big yard for a row home in the city. It's a pretty decent-sized yard. And so when I bought it, I ripped out all the concrete. I had it depaved, and I'm trying to landscape it. And I'm having a real devil of a time trying to get the grass to root into this yard. And the chief number one challenge is I have two dogs, and they're big dogs. And they do their best to thwart all my lawn efforts.
Well, that's no problem, Peter. The answer is easy. All you got to do is next time you start a new lawn, keep your dogs off it for a year. Okay? All right, next call.
I tried to do that when I bought the place, and we were starting to do some renovations, and I had a few months before we moved in. So I started to seed the lawn. I put some sod down. And then after a few months of dogs,
Now, which did you do, Peter? Did you seed or sod?
I sod it.
You put down sod. You did it yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's like assembling a gas grill for the first time. No human can do it correctly. You know, it takes 16 hours and you got 5 parts left over. Putting sod down correctly is a job left to the pros.
Ah.
So, anyway, we're entering spring. The weather is warming up. This is a time where, again, you could put down sod. Now, the second time you do something like this, you're going to do it a lot better. But okay. It's a ton of work if you do it correctly. You have to remove a fairly enormous amount of soil so that the height of the sod matches the height of your surrounding areas. And you really got to loosen up the soil underneath where you're going to put the sod down. You really got to till it up so the roots of the new grass can get down there easily. You have to install the sod within 24 hours of receiving it, and it has to be kept in the shade all that time. Then it has to be watered ridiculously heavy for like hours and hours and hours, and then really nobody is supposed to go near it for a good month or 6 weeks.
Ah.
How much sun does your backyard get?
Well, in the height of summer, it gets full sun for a few hours a day. In the lowest point of winter, it gets no sun. And in between, it's sort of in between.
Okay. So that's not going to support most grasses. And the grasses it will support are the ones that can take the least foot traffic. If you want to try a Hail Mary pass, and the good thing about trying this pass right now is it's a summertime grass. It's a warm season grass. You would install it now, and that's zoysia grass.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't care that the grass turned brown in the wintertime as long as it was healthy, right?
Sure, right. Yeah, as long as it'll come back and come spring.
See, one of the things is you need a spreading grass. You need a grass that will fill in its own dents and divots that the dogs make in it. And none of the grasses that you can grow for shade, the cool season grasses, fill in their own spots. They have to be constantly overseeded, and you'd never stay ahead of the dogs.
Right.
Zoysia grass you establish by plugs right now. You go online, you find a magazine ad, and you buy three times as many plugs as it says for your area, because you have a really small area to fill in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you plant it heavily. The Zoysia things will spread very naturally. They'll start to fill in. After they're up and growing and they're starting to fill in, you can even have the dogs out there in a restrained manner every once in a while. But by the end of the summer, it'll be a solid Zoysia grass lawn, and after that, it's going to be indestructible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the one thing you have to remember, however, is if the dogs are outside in the summer and it gets really hot, they're going to want to dig a pit for themselves so they can stay cool. You can actually let them see you dig it. Pretend you're digging it with your hands. And, you know, go for it, Peter. Lay down in it afterwards. You know, give yourself a dog biscuit, a milk bone for your hard work. And then they'll imitate you.
All right. I can try that.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Back to work now. Come on.
All right.
Back to work. 1-888-346-9499. Katie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Katie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am just ducky. Thanks for asking. Where is Katie great?
I am great in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. We rarely get calls from... we rarely get calls from the state capital. It's funny.
That's because they're all professional farmers out here in Harrisburg.
All right. What can we do for Katie, an unprofessional farmer in Harrisburg, PA?
Well, I have a very small backyard that is primarily for my dogs, and I'm interested in planting peonies and hydrangeas in pots.
And did you say in pots?
Yes.
Not in Harrisburg, no.
No, okay.
Is this going to be the quickest phone call in the history of the show?
Oh, no.
Yeah, because these are plants that need a true winter. You know, they need to go through the seasons. And with their roots in their ground, they're very hardy in the Harrisburg, Philadelphia, even Pittsburgh area. But with their roots above ground in some kind of a pot, the roots would freeze sometime in January and the plants would die.
Oh, okay.
Now, if the pot, quote unquote, is big enough and made of the right material, and you are not insistent on a plant that would not be hardy, you can choose from a variety of evergreens that would survive your winter. So here's how you do this. You don't choose the plant. It's kind of more like the plant chooses you. The bigger the container, the better the chance of plant survival. You've been outside hotels and public buildings where they have these little evergreens and these giant pots that look like the Arabian Nights. You don't have to go that big, but we're talking like a half whiskey barrel kind of thing.
Okay.
Because you need that insulating effect of the soil. And then in the middle of this giant container, you would put a plant, let's say your USDA zone is zone 6. You would drop down 2 zones. You would get a plant that was rated for USDA zone 4 and above, which means it can survive a Wisconsin, Minnesota winter with its roots in the ground. But with its roots above ground, you need a very cold, hardy plant. And that's going to be a tough-looking evergreen. The pretty you want, you can plant all along the outsides of this pot. Reserve the center for one of these nice little alpine evergreens, you know, whether it's a tree, a shrub, or a bush. And then, again, because you've got a big container, you can put the nicest annual flowers you want around it. If the area gets a lot of sun, you can fill the area around the plant with something like marigolds and petunias. You can have other flowering plants draping over the side of the container. If the area is shady, you can put in begonias and impatiens. And then in the fall, you can still continue that color. You would take out your summertime plants and you would put pansies all around the outside rim of this planter. Pansies are so tough, they will survive the winter, certainly in your area, planted in the ground, but they could possibly survive the winter in the container. So that's the answer. Forget the hydrangeas and peonies unless you're going to plant them in the ground. Again, big containers, alpine plants in the center, decorate the outside according to the season. It'll be a great look and very little work for you.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Katie.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear on Saturday, May 5th at the Green Garden Fair at the Camden County Environmental Center in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Then I'll give a timely talk on growing tasty tomatoes and answer your garden questions from 11 to 1 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church's Environmental Fair in Exton, PA on Saturday, May 12th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to let the sun shine in and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And Smart Pots, makers of the Smart Pot and the Big Bag Bed, fabric containers for your performance container garden. Learn more about the features and benefits of the Smart Pot at smartpots.com. That's smartpots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, everybody wants to solarize their soil. They think it's such a cool way to get rid of disease and weed seeds in the soil. But it has to be done a very specific way. And as a listener will ask later on, can you do it if there's a tree in the middle of the area you want to solarize? We'll answer all of those bright and sunny questions after more of your bright and sunny phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sakina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just fine, Sakina. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Well, and where are you?
I'm in New Jersey, about half an hour outside of Atlantic City.
Oh, north. Okay. So what can we do for Sakina in the Garden State?
Okay. We just had a mulberry tree that was actually really close to our house, but I liked it because it produced a whole lot of shade, but it didn't produce any fruit anymore. Anyway, after the couple of nor'easters that we just had, we had a lot of ice and snow on the trees, and one of the trunks, there were five in total, one of the trunks fell over. And so it was pretty close to the house, so my husband decided to just have the whole thing cut down. So I can't even tell you how massive it is. It's so much wood, and it's a lot of branches. The tree must have went up into the sky at least maybe about 100 feet or so.
Really?
Yeah, it was a huge tree. If you looked at the Google map, you can see the tree covering the back of the house when spring and summer is in, from the leaves and everything, the canopy. So the question that we have is that we're going to keep the wood because we have a wood burning stove. So we're going to get that all cut up. But the branches, we wanted to get a wood chipper, at least rent one, so that we can get all of the wood, chipped up. But we're trying to figure out what to do with it or where to store it. And I saw, when I was reading online, I saw one woman was using it as a pathway for, the garden beds, the raised garden beds. So I thought that was a great idea, but we don't have our garden beds yet. We're going to. So we want to know what is the best way to store it so that we'll be able to use it when we get ready to do the garden beds in the path.
Well, one thing, because I have a wood-burning stove that I only used to use for emergencies and power failures, and this past winter was just so dank and dreary, I started using it again. And one thing I realized when I got to the end of winter is I hadn't run out of wood, but I was out of kindling. I was out, trying to pull fallen branches out from underneath the snow. So don't discount the need to save kindling as well as big pieces of wood. You really burn through that stuff fast.
That's true.
And then the basic answer is just pile it all up. Do you have an out-of-the-way place, or are you in a tight neighborhood?
No. I have about an acre of land. So, yeah, we definitely have some place to put it. I just didn't know if something would happen to it. I didn't know if it, wouldn't get any air, so it might get moldy on the inside or what. We just weren't sure. So we just wanted to make sure if that was something because we're definitely going to do pile it up in certain areas where we don't want grass to grow around our property line, between us and our neighbors, because it looks like the jungle out there when everything, it looks nice, but at the same time, it's a lot. So we just want to clear a lot around the perimeter of our property, and I just wanted to be able to put some of that down as well, to make sure that nothing grows up from under it.
If you chip it up now or over the next couple of months and then pile it up into a massive pile, it will remain wood chips on the outside. But towards the center and towards the bottom, it will actually turn into compost that you can use around your plants. All wood will return to a state of looking like soil, but it takes a fairly long time. The bigger the pile, the more concentrated the pile, the faster the bottom and the center will become compost. It won't get moldy or anything like that, but if you've got that much land, you could also just pile up the branches somewhere, and that can be your kindling stock. If you want both, then you chip up about half of the branches, you make a big pile, or it sounds to me like you're going to spread it right away along your property line that much.
Yeah, we're going to end up spreading. I can't wait to see exactly how much it produces, and we will still have a lot left for kindling because I have the wood burner stove, but I also have a fire pit in the backyard, which I was going to put some over to the side for that. It's so much wood. And on top of that, we had another four or five trees that fell in the back where we actually want to put our raised garden beds. So it's like we really do have a whole lot of wood. I don't think we're going to run out for a while.
A year or two from now, you'll be able to take wood chips from the top of the pile and the outside of the pile, but eventually you're going to put a shovel in there and you're going to get what looks like rich black soil, and that's compost for use in the gardens you're going to have.
Right, exactly.
Okay?
Yep, sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck to you.
All right, thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jack, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Doing pretty well.
Okay, and where is Jack doing well?
I'm doing well up in Hayden, Idaho, up way up in northern Idaho.
Oh, okay. We don't get a lot of Idahoans. Thanks for calling in. What can we do for you, Jack?
Well, Mike, I've got several mature broadleaf trees that I've been able to successfully keep from having aphid problems by using a chemical called imidacloprid. And I'm seeing that that's a neonicotinoid, and I'm getting worried about what effect that might have on any bees that are going after the flowers on these trees.
It'll kill them.
So I've been putting it on either before the flowers come out or after they're done blooming. So trying to minimize any chance that the bees are going to get exposed to it. And I'm wondering if that's going to work well enough or no. You better come up with an alternative way to deal with these aphids.
Oh, yeah. There's no need to be. A matter of fact, you are reminding me of a terrible tragedy. It was also in the Midwest. It was in a parking lot of a commercial establishment, like one of the big box stores. And the landscaper thought the shade trees in the parking lot had aphids. And he sprayed it with one of these neonics. And I think they counted something like 50,000 bumblebees had fallen dead on the parking lot over the next week. Just like horrific. You know, children crying, women wailing. Now, shade trees would typically not have any kind of aphid problems that you would notice. So let's drop back here and tell me what's going on. What made you decide that you had to do something?
Well, I could see them. You know, I could see the little insects on the leaves, on the birch.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the birch. And so I did that, and then I started treating the birch myself with this product where you just pour it on the ground. You don't inject it in the soil. You just pour it around the base of the tree.
Yeah, it's a systemic insecticide. It's killing everything. It's killing the beneficial insects, quite honestly, that would have come to eat the aphids. It's killing everything in your environment. Now, are these trees growing out of a treated lawn or some sort of chemically treated environment?
No, other than I just put on some low nitrogen fertilizer maybe in the spring around Memorial Day and then maybe around Labor Day. Other than that, that's all I do. I don't put anything else out there.
Yeah, it's highly unusual. Aphids are generally not that persistent a tree pest, but you have a couple of natural options, all of which would require that you stop using these chemicals, because there are many beneficial insects that eat aphids, but they're more affected by the poisons than the aphids are, and the entire tree has become toxic. So how tall is the tallest tree?
Oh, that'd be one of the ash trees. I'm guessing 40 to 50 feet.
Okay.
And the canopy, some of those canopies are 40 feet wide. They've really
can
done
you
well
get out,
over the years.
Can you get out there with a pressure washer?
No. I had a guy spray the ash trees when I first saw all that really heavy infestation, and he had a heck of a time. I'm glad he was wearing protective gear because, man, he was really having a hard time.
No. I'm talking about water.
No. I'm saying I don't have anything that I could get to the top of these with. I can, you know, they're so big that I can't even get up there. I thought I could try that, but they're just too big to have an effect up there.
Still, the first thing you want to do is early in the season. You don't want to wait till you see a problem. You want to be blasting those trees with water as high up as you can get. In study after study, high-pressure water has been found to be more effective against aphids than any chemical pesticide. And then what I would suggest, the cure for aphids is an insect called the green lacewing. You can buy the eggs of the green lacewing in bulk and release them around the base of the tree after you give the tree a good soaking. When the eggs hatch, the aphid lions, the larval form of this creature, will crawl up into the tree. And each aphid lion will eat 50 to 150 aphids a day. And then they'll breed up in the tree, and you don't have to do anything after that. They'll turn into adults. The adults will nest in the tree. They'll lay eggs. The eggs will hatch into more aphid lions. By the end of the summer, they should have it well controlled. Generally, you do 3 controlled releases. The first one early in the spring after you really soak the tree down well because water attracts them. And then once these creatures who live to consume aphids, it's their only food, once they get naturalized, and they will naturalize in Idaho, they'll survive in egg form over the winter. They'll just be there naturally taking care of this. To you, the aphids are, of course, an enormous pest because they're hurting your trees and they're making a mess. But you have to realize in nature, they're just little bags of protein for something else. And the answer is just to reintroduce that other something else and let them control the aphids. I think if all you do is dedicate the amount of money you've spent on insecticides to beneficial insects, I think you'll take care of the problem.
Okay. All right, Mike. Well, thanks for taking my call, and I really appreciate your advice, and I'll get to work on it.
Thank you, sir. Good luck.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
1-888-346-9499. Ann, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Ann. Where are you?
I'm in Media, PA.
All right. What can we do for Ann in Media?
My automobile mechanic had a conversation with me the other day and was telling me that he and his wife have a compost bin, one of those big black jobs mm-hmm. with a lid, and he has a problem with ants. And so I had a feeling that the reason was that they weren't putting enough leaves in there. And I went over to see him today before this call. And true enough, they're using just leaves. They're not shredding the leaves. They don't have a shredder yet. Because other than that, they're doing everything right, green, brown, and so forth, and clippings from the yard. But so is there any way that until they get shredded leaves that they can cure this problem with the ants?
You're absolutely correct in that it's totally detrimental to put whole leaves into a compost pile or a compost bin. The whole leaves are going to mat down. They're not going to become compost. And I don't know what they mean by they don't have a shredder yet. I mean, you go out and you buy a leaf blower with a reverse setting and a collection bag. They cost like $60. They get your leaves up. They shred your leaves automatically for you. You know, if you're going to make compost, that's an essential tool.
Yeah, I know that. But they're a young couple just starting out with their home and garden, and I don't. The other thing he could do is he could run a lawnmower over them, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's lots of ways to shred your leaves, and it's a common rookie mistake. And it's going to mean they don't get good compost. But it doesn't have anything to do with the ants.
Oh, okay. What's causing the ants? So?
They're throwing their kitchen waste into this bin.
Yeah, well, they think they're mixing it in with other things. And apparently, I think it's the leaves that are holding everything back.
Oh, the leaves are holding everything back, but the ants are there for the food. The ants are there for the kitchen waste. You know, that's not as common a problem as you might expect. I'm thinking back now, and I recycle some of my kitchen waste through outdoor sealed black plastic composting units, and I don't think I've ever had ants in them. The fact that they have ants shows that they don't have a good compost pile, because a real good composter would be too hot for the ants to survive in.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you something. I live in a senior community, and we had a community garden, and they had those black composters, mm-hmm. and I couldn't convince them to get a shredder. So all we had was a lousy compost and a lot of ants, because we were just throwing the garden waste in there. So it was like garbage.
Right, exactly. So if you had done a corollary, if you had gone, okay, I'm an ant researcher and I want lots of subjects to study, you would have done exactly the same thing. So people shouldn't be surprised when the ants show up. Really, their problem is they're not going to have any good compost to use. And because it's been a mix of kitchen waste and stuff, the material's going to be almost unworkable. tell them in the summer, you know, it's not that big a deal. You, on sale, you can get these things for $40, a leaf blower, electric leaf blower with a reverse setting. You know, if they're serious about gardening, then they can save enormous amounts of leaves. So then they can mix fresh shredded leaves in with their kitchen waste over the winter.
Oh, that's what I used to do when I lived in University City. I would shred all the leaves that I could get in the area, and I would put some into my compost bin. I had two of them. And then I would bag the rest of them and put that into a big can and just hold on to them. And every time I put kitchen waste into my compost bin, I would add a bag of shredded leaves. You know, I know they're gold.
And you got good compost, you didn't have ants, and you never got to July thinking you had wasted your time back in
the
fall.
No, no. Okay, I'll pass the word along to them, and, you know, maybe they'll find a blower.
Maybe they'll find religion. Composting doesn't work the way you hope it will. Composting simply works the way it's supposed to.
Right, right.
All right, thank you, Ann. Good luck to you this summer.
Thanks for your help. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I am really excited to head out west for my appearance at the historic Sunflower Theater in Cortez, Colorado at 5 o'clock on Saturday, May 19th. Tickets are free, but you must register in advance. And if we fill that 5 o'clock show, I'm going to do another one later that night. But don't go clicking the links to secure your tickets at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to let the sun shine in and take more of your sunny phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Smart Pots, makers of the Smart Pot and the Big Bag Bed, fabric containers for your performance container garden. Learn more about the features and benefits of the Smart Pot at smartpots.com. That's smartpots.com. And the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Can you solarize a bed? That is, use the concentrated rays of the sun through a special technique and a special type of plastic to destroy weeds and disease in the soil if the bed has a tray in the middle. We'll answer that burning question after a couple more of your burning phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Brian, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Brian. Where are you, man?
I live in Wilmington, Delaware.
Okay. And what can we do for Brian in Wilmington?
Okay, so my wife and I moved into a rental house back in end of October, beginning of November. And in the backyard, there is a trellis that is covered with grapevine because the previous owner, although it seems he didn't really take much care of the property itself, I'm told he likes to make his own wine. Now, the thing has just completely overgrown the trellis, and it's sticking out kind of not only underneath the trellis, but outwards, and it's kind of making it difficult for us to enjoy the yard as much as I think we could. I want to find out what I can do to get the growth of this vine under control. I've got a couple of different concerns that are tangent to that, so that we can enjoy the yard. I'm concerned that part of it might be dying, and I'm also concerned about some rose bushes, some thorny rose bushes that are growing up intertwined with the grapevine. So I need your help in sorting this out.
Have you seen roses on the rose bushes?
I saw some roses in late fall.
What color were the flowers?
They were pink.
So there are true rose bushes intertwined back there. Okay, the first question is, do you want to keep either plant?
You know, I'd like to do what I can to keep the grapevine. I'm not going to be making wine myself, but also because the landlord thinks, you know, although she has said you can pretty much do what I want back there, she said that she'd like us to keep the grapevine. But other than that, it's pretty much in our hands. The roses, I don't particularly care too much for. I mean, I think we're going to be having some people over with kids, and I'm concerned that the kids might, you know, cut themselves or prick themselves on thorns because it's in an area where we like to recreate.
Okay. Well, especially if you don't care about it, you can cut the rose bush back to like 6 inches high, and then you can dig it up and transplant it, or you can dig it up and plant it in the woods, or you can dig it up and forget about it. If you are going to try to recover this grapevine, however, you have a fairly ginormous amount of work ahead of you over the spring, summer, and fall. Grapevines are very demanding. They need to be pruned every year. They need to have their leaves and grape clusters thinned throughout the summer, and you really have to keep a sharp eye out for pests and disease. Now, nobody's going to prick their finger on them, but they are a lot of work, not even to get real good grapes out of, but just to keep them from looking like an awful mess. So here's the deal. You can go out and you can start pruning them now. You can take off anything that looks dead. You can remove most of the old growth, especially if you really don't care if you get a harvest the first year or something. Just get out there with a pruners, loppers, a bow saw, whatever the size of the vine requires. As long as you leave a good foot of growth coming up out of the ground, they will sprout and grow this year. Then it sounds like you might want to tear down the old trellis and erect a new one. There are some fairly simple ones that you can follow online, use metal and metal wire that aren't as time-consuming or temporary as trying to build a wooden trellis. And then as the plant grows through your trellis over the season, if it looks healthy, I would suggest you constantly remove leaves, keep the airflow going through the plant. And who knows, you might get lucky and get some clusters of tasty grapes. If the grapes were used to make wine, they're probably going to be really good eating grapes.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. One of them still has some green up there, and I think that that's because, you know, this time of year it's just starting to come back, but
yeah,
other ones are not showing the same signs.
Don't worry about it. Again, you really don't care if these things live or die, so just do what I said. Get the roses out of there, prune the grapevines back to about a foot from each main vine coming out of the ground, get the old trellis out of there, get ready to rig up a new one. And if you get lucky and if it grows, train it along the trellis and then, you know, keep the airflow open. And like I said, it will look pretty. Grapevines themselves are pretty if you clean them up, and you might get grapes. But
okay,
don't overthink it. This is like just laying out the roadway this first year.
All right. That sounds good. I just want to say one more thing, Mike. I started listening to your show a few years ago. I was living in Nashville, and I used to hear you on Saturday mornings on WPLN. Never thought I would end up calling in, and I appreciate your advice now that I'm back up here in WHYY territory. So thank you for your help.
And we love our listeners down in Nashville and Memphis. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Sasha, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am just ducky, thanks. Where is Sasha Great?
Well, right now I'm in Philadelphia, just like you.
Oh, okay. So where in Philly?
I live in South Philadelphia, but I work in West Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Sasha in Philadelphia?
So I purchased a new home in South Philadelphia last year, and it came with a raised bed about 13 by 3 feet, and I was really excited to garden after living in apartments for so long. Very quickly, I saw that there was evidence that the neighborhood cats had been using the bed as a litter box.
Uh-huh. Evidence with little quotation marks around it.
Yes. So last summer, my first summer at the house, I tried to sift the soil a little bit. I added some soil and a little bit of compost, and I planted a bunch of things, but only the cucumbers and the tomatoes went well. But I'm wondering whether it's a good idea for me to do that again, whether it's safe for me to be planting edibles, or whether I should just stick to plants.
See, this is where people have the biggest misconceptions about dangerous substances in the soil. The danger is directly to you. You don't have to grow anything to eat in that bed. But every time you touch that soil with bare hands, you expose yourself to some of the nastiest parasites in the world of zoology, toxoplasmosis and other related organisms that can get into your body through the tiniest cut and wreak havoc with you. So,
even with gloves?
Well, if you wear gloves, then you are relatively safe. The idea is to make sure you have gloves that are going to keep the outside outside and that are comfortable enough so that you don't take them off. But yes, using gloved hands is very safe. In my experience, because the gloves get bulky on people, people take them off. Right? It sounds like I hit a nerve there.
Yes, you did.
So one easy answer for that part of the equation is baseball batting gloves. Go to a hardware store, go to Walmart, go to a sporting goods store, and go to the sports section and try on baseball batting gloves. They'll be hanging from a peg. There'll be like 18 different sizes. You can find the size that's exactly right for your hand. When you find the right size, buy two or three pair. When you put them on and you strap them in with the Velcro, they are a second skin. They're highly protective, but they're so tight you don't mind wearing them. Those are the gloves you don't take off in the garden.
Perfect. So I can plant food to eat?
Yeah, but we don't want cats using this as a litter box. It's disgusting. So what you're going to do is either at the same store or the box store next door, you're going to buy a long roll of chicken wire. You're going to make sure you can cover the length of the bed. You're going to get a pair of wire cutters. Wearing your brand new baseball batting gloves, make sure they're the red ones. Red for the Phillies. Don't you dare be working in South Philly wearing Dodger blue. I can't be responsible for your safety if you do.
Yes, sir.
So cut the chicken wire to fit the bed exactly. Lay it down over the surface of the soil, then push it in the tiniest bit. Cats, even feral cats, will not poop where they can't scratch up the soil to cover it. Chicken wire is highly effective. As soon as they jump into the bed, they won't like it. They won't like the way it feels. They'll try to scratch it up. Their claws will get caught. And then they'll just go poop in somebody else's garden. Other things that I've been told work well is lining the inside of your raised bed frames with chopsticks, a whole bunch of chopsticks, so it's weird for them to try to jump in. And some people swear by the fact that old citrus rinds placed on the tops of the bed frames themselves are very cat repellent.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the biggest thing is the chicken wire down over top of the soil. That always seems to work.
Awesome. Wonderful. I'm so excited now. I thought I was done for.
Yeah, just be careful. No more bare hands in that dirt.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. And don't touch your eyes while you're out there.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, just keep chanting that. It's like playing with hot peppers. Don't touch your eyes. Don't touch your eyes. Don't touch your eyes.
I've done that. It's horrible.
Yep. All right. Good luck, Sash.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Soil solarization, what it can and can't do. Sunny Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Would you please get us started by reading this week's question?
I would be most happy to. Milan in Lamont, Illinois, 25 miles southwest of Chicago, writes, I recently bought a home where the landscape has been neglected for decades and have a question about solarizing a flower bed with a tree in the center. The tree is about the diameter of the circle you make when you touch your fingertip and thumb together. It's surrounded by very thick ground cover and poison ivy. I thought that if I tilled the area, removed the green and brown matter, soaked it with the 100% water saturation you recommend in your article on soil solarization, and covered it with the recommended clear plastic 1 to 3 mils thick, I'd be able to start fresh. But to do that, I'd have to surround the tree with the plastic, and I'm afraid that might cook the roots. I love the tree and don't want to hurt it. Any advice?
Yeah, my first piece of advice is that poison ivy has to be dealt with separately, and not by tilling. If you till an area that contains poison ivy, you will spread the plant's allergenic oil throughout the entire bed and contaminate all of the other tilled weeds and the tines of the tiller. You might even spread enough of the oil around the soil to make the very earth itself allergenic.
Ugh. At the very least, it would be an itchy nightmare to try and clear the chopped up plants away after such a tilling.
Yes, and to answer the question directly here, you can't solarize such an area without potentially killing the tree in the middle via the root cooking that Milan describes. Heck, the tilling alone might achieve the same end by chopping up the poor tree's roots. But you know, if you do Milan's fingertip-to-thumb calculation, it indicates a pretty small tree.
Ah, so you think he should remove the tree, heal it in for the season, carefully remove the poison ivy from saturated soil using your plastic bags instead of gloves technique, till up the area, rake up the tilled plant debris, level the soil, saturate it completely, cover it tightly with 1 to 3 mil thick clear plastic, solarize the bed, and replace the tree in the fall. Right? Right, Mike? Did I get it right?
Why am I even here? I'm not justifying my oxygen. You go ahead and finish up. I'm going to walk over and annoy the staff at Fresh Air.
Actually, they say you do that really well from over here, especially when you practice your Godzilla imitations in the hallway. Anyway, was I not right?
A tree that size should be fairly easy to move if you get a bunch of friends over, dig up a really big area around the tree, drop the root ball down on a tarp, carry it over to a new spot on the tarp, and, as you say, heal it in by temporarily planting it in a holding area for the summer, preferably in dappled shade to limit the transplant shock.
But I hear a big butt coming.
Oh, man, I'm biting my tongue so hard I won't be able to eat Szechuan food for a month. Anyway, you are correct, oh wise one. Milan is half an hour from Chicago, which means a fairly short season and summer days that rarely get uncomfortably hot. For successful solarization, using the concentrated rays of the sun to destroy weed seeds and disease in the soil, the area would have to be in full sun, and the plastic would have to stay on from June through September.
That's right, but if Milan were down south or out west...
Oh, come on, I think you can solarize a bed in something like 17 minutes in Phoenix in the summer. But the technique becomes more demanding as you move north of an area roughly along a curved line heading west from Washington, D.C. It's easy in the Carolinas, almost impossible once you get up by the Great Lakes. But if he does everything you said...
Hey, it's just what I've learned from you over the years.
Now I'm suddenly hoping Terry Gross doesn't listen to this show.
I wouldn't worry about that.
Gee, thanks. Anyway, a qualified yes. If the area gets full sun and Milan gets the tree out of there for the summer, it could work.
But I hear the butt train pulling into the station again.
Soil solarization is a fairly nuclear option. It was created to try and mitigate really extreme situations. Tenacious perennial weeds like quackgrass and tough soil diseases like verticillium and fusarium wilt. It's not a first or second line option. I'd instead suggest that Milan read over our poison ivy removal instructions and get that dangerous plant out of the area. Then look at what's left behind. It sounds like he could just have a pulling party, cover the cleared area with a single sheet of cardboard to keep any old weeds at bay, install 6-inch high edging in the front, pile compost on top of the cardboard, and turn the area around the tree into a nice new raised bed he could use this season.
A lot less work, especially if the sun don't shine in that part of Chi-Town.
Well, that sure was some enlightening info about using solar radiation to beat back weeds, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail with access to more solarizing stories, click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes! My producer is threatening to enlighten me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location with your email. Please, please, please. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find the answers to all those questions you were going to ask us, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Please check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Webmasters Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website bright. Our associate producer of Production Association is Brett Rader. Solar-powered Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, is so bright we call him Sonny. I'm dank and dismal Mike McGrath, and I'll crawl out from under my rock in time to see you again next week.
Sonny, yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sonny.
How can you get tulips to reliably reflower? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to get the most difficult of the spring bloomers to return, even on a volcanic island in Japan. Plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden.